weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Beto da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, July 24th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Damien O'Mara joins us live from Paris as we get reaction to Ireland 7's rugby success in their opening Olympic match against South Africa. Damien Lawler has the latest Gaelic Games news, while Nadine Doherty reviews the Ladies Football Championship semi-finals and Aoife Murray previews the last four in the Camogie Championship. We'll also round up all of today's sports news headlines. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 515 52 or message us on WhatsApp 0871879200.
Game on 2FM.
Good evening, welcome along to the show. An hour of sport ahead of us here on 2FM. Nadine Doherty, I should say, is already in studio. Nadine, how are you?
I'm great, Shane Dawson, and how are you?
I am fantastic.
Excellent.
Absolutely fantastic, because the Olympics has, opening ceremony hasn't even happened and the Olympics has begun. Great news for the Irish Sevens rugby. Bad news for Canadian soccer. I don't know if you saw this, Nadine. Canada head coach Bev Priestman will not take charge of their opening Olympic match against New Zealand, and two members of her staff have been sent home from the games amid claims a drone was used to spy on their opponent's training. Assistant coach Yasmin Mander and Joseph Lombardi, an unaccredited analyst with Canada Soccer, have been sent home after a drone was alleged to have recorded New Zealand training sessions on two separate occasions. Canada, the gold medalists from Tokyo, are due to play New Zealand in their opening Group A game in St Etienne tomorrow. A statement from the Canadian Olympic Committee said Mander and Lombardi would be sent home immediately and Canada Soccer staff would undergo mandatory ethics training, while Priestman, the former England assistant coach, announced she had withdrawn from coaching tomorrow's fixture. Priestman said, on behalf of our entire team, I first and foremost want to apologise to the players and staff of New Zealand football and to the players on Team Canada. This does not represent the values that our team stands for. Has, when you back in your football playing days, no drones flying over anyone?
No, no drones. But remember that story that apparently Jim McGuinness had some lad up a tree.
Up a tree?
Kerry?
I think that was true. I think that's confirmed.
That's how he was building the wall in Convoy. I don't know if that wall was built yet. It's random enough. Like, you kind of wonder, like, what would you learn from drone footage from a training session? Yeah. It's a bit much. It's very random now.
Random. And, like, they've got some big hitters in the group as well. So
yeah.
But
for Canada, though, I mean, I'd say Canada had and would have aspirations of meddling.
Gold medals from Tokyo.
Yeah.
This isn't small fish here.
No,
this isn't
not.
Someone that's their first Olympics. These are experienced.
Yeah, it's very random. It's funny all the time.
It's all happening. Bad news for Italian tennis fans, because Jannik Sinner has announced his withdrawal from the Olympics with a heartbreaking statement after being diagnosed with tonsillitis. The world number one was set to continue a strong year by representing Italy at the Games, but doctors have urged him against competing in a month hampered by illness. Sinner hasn't played since his Wimbledon quarterfinal defeat against Daniel Medvedev, during which he left the court and later confirmed he was unwell. And it's all happening in football, really, because the match earlier between Argentina and Morocco, confusion, I think, is still reigning over whether the match was completed or suspended after the pitch invasion that followed Argentina's equaliser in the 16th minute of extra time. Crowd trouble forced the match to be delayed. And reading the RT Twitter, actually, the Argentina goal has been ruled out for offside by VAR more than an hour after the game was suspended. So for those who just don't like VAR, in the 90 minutes of football, the 120 minutes of football, an hour after, you'd be sick.
Yeah, they took a while to, they must have gone after the break and then had a look at it after. I don't know.
A number of cups and bottles were thrown at the celebrating Argentinian side before what appeared to be a flare landed near the players and coaching staff. A number of fans in Morocco colours also ran onto the pitch, so there are some unsavoury scenes.
Yeah, and
like
Shane, all joking aside about that, you know, you do look back to the Uruguay incident as well in Colombia, and I mean, there has been huge crowd trouble, and it just seems to have really flared up over the last couple of months, and it probably is something that FIFA do have to look at, because you'd hope, you know, that it doesn't come to a point where something really dangerous does happen.
Yeah.
You know.
No, absolutely. And we see articles. There was a really well-written article on the RT website by Kate Farley, a multimedia journalist in Paris, stating about an unprecedented security operation promised for games. Now, I know that's citywide and that's terror threats and everything else, but when you boil it down to people getting on the pitch and getting access to players, it isn't ideal by any stretch of your imagination. Nadine, you're sticking around because we do have two cracking semi-finals to review in ladies' football, as I'm just being told play is set to resume With the officials and players warming up for that Argentina-Morocco match. So we'll keep you up to date with the last few minutes in this wild football match as the Olympics kicks off. Ladies football to review, Camogie to preview. Damien Lawler will join us as well. We hear from actually Armagh legend Stephen McDonald as well, who Damien was chatting to. So lots to get through. However, great news for the Irish men's rugby sevens team. They defeated South Africa 10-5 and Damien O'Mara is in Paris for us. But first, let's hear how that match played out.
Today, but out come Ireland. Good reception as well at the Stade de France. And look, you go back to Tokyo 2021, altogether different preparations. It's not the case this year. 1 year out, they qualified. They've been playing some scintillating stuff on the World 7 Series itself. And they have more than enough here to contend for a medal place if they can get out of their pool and into the quarterfinals. Ireland keep the ball alive, though. Chance here, surely. And it goes onto the wing. And finally, Jordan Conroy gets the game's first try. Ireland fully deserving of that. They've dominated possession. South Africa have barely had the ball.
Kennedy.
Two-handed carry. And two on the outside as well. That's nicely done. Taken in by Jack Kelly. And back to Kennedy. Step off his left. Beautiful sidestep. And Terry Kennedy, surely that is the victory wrapped up for Ireland. And look what it means to Kennedy. Ireland in Tokyo, last Olympic Games, could not find a win, but they've started this one with real intent and Irish eyes at the Stade de France smiling.
Last play.
Can Ireland see this one out? Possession absolutely crucial here. Going for the short one. It's not going to go 10, and that should be the end of that. Ireland will take the tap penalty, and they will kick the ball out for their first victory in the pool stage here. Lennox then is going to tap this, put it into the stand, and Ireland will start their Olympic campaign with a victory against the Blitz Box. The perfect start, really. Dominated possession in the first half. The try at the end from Jordan Conroy. They added a second, and that was enough to see off South Africa. Harry McNulty can be very satisfied by what his team has done in their opening match here. Japan still to come later on, but this was the one they had to win today, you feel, to give themselves every chance of progressing. Full-time score in Pool A, Ireland 10, South Africa 5.
So a great win for the Irish men's sevens rugby team. As I mentioned, Damien O'Mara joins us now from Paris. Damien, a deserved victory for the Irish?
Yeah, I think so. I know we're going to hear from Jordan in a moment. I think it's a game that they will reflect upon and they will think that they probably should have made it a little bit easier for themselves. Twice in the first half, they had tries that they thought they had scored that were called back. Terry Kennedy, in the third minute, kicked a ball through, chased it through himself and touched it down, but had just gone dead in advance of him making contact. And then Jordan Conroy, 3 minutes later, a break, but he was adjudged by the TMO to have touched the ball down short. So Ireland certainly dominated in terms of possession. I think there's no doubt they were the stronger of the two teams over the balance of the 14 minutes and whatever else was played. That late try maybe made it a little bit more uncomfortable for them from a South African perspective than it should have done. But I think that the number one thing is this is a squad of players that have waited so long to get out onto the field to play. None of them, with the exception of Hugo Keenan, had ever played in the Stade de France. They hadn't even trained in the Stade de France in advance of this. The opening game today was Australia against Samoa. That was the first time anyone has set foot in the pitch here since the Rugby World Cup final, because basically the stadium has been put into cold storage since. So I think very much it's a situation of we're up and running and we've avoided a banana skin.
Well, a good start. And I'm right in saying if we defeat Japan this evening, it's a quarterfinal to look forward to?
Yeah, so it's we have three pools of four teams. The top two automatically progress to the quarterfinals. Two of the three remaining third-place teams will advance. Ireland missed out on the quarterfinal place on points difference in Tokyo. So, I remember being in the stadium, and it was such a strange experience because you're in a 60,000 capacity stadium, which is empty aside from what limited media was allowed to be there, and they were absolutely devastated. They are here to win these two games today, to book their passage effectively, and then they are coming back tomorrow in order, in their minds, hopefully to top it up to not just advancement, to an advancement as the pool winners. So they'll be very, very strongly fancied against Japan. Japan played New Zealand in the second game in Pool A, which was the match after Ireland's game against South Africa. New Zealand running in six tries. They beat them by 40 points to 12. So I think Ireland will be quite confident.
You were speaking to Ireland's opening try scorer, Jordan Conroy, who we can hear from now.
Jordan, listen, you've had to wait a long time since qualification to get this game underway. A massive start.
Yeah, definitely the start we wanted. We came out and, you know, we wanted to work hard, you know, set to our standards, and really wanted to put the foot forward, and we did. It was definitely a hard match out there, but, you know, I think the main thing was we kept in control of the game. We didn't let it get, we didn't go ahead of ourselves, and we stuck to the game plan, and that's what happens, you know, when you stick to the game plan, you have, you know, all things should go right, and it did, and it just went our way.
KG in the end, like, you had two try opportunities in the first half that slipped away from you collectively. Yeah. You know, listen, you might have liked to have a little bit more daylight between the two sides at the end.
Ah, yeah, you know, that's the way the game goes, I think. It's just like the first match, pre-nerves in a way, you're just a little bit overexcited, but, you know, we didn't let that falter us whatsoever, and we just kept coming back and coming back, and, you know, we executed where it needed to be. So, yeah, I mean, could have went either way. You could have went either way.
Is it a relief to be up and running?
100%, yeah. I mean, even in the dressing room, you know, there's like pre-match nerves, and it's natural, but, you know, we wanted to have a good start, you know, and go on bringing a lot of confidence into the next game, because, you know, if we get 2 out of 2 today, it really sets us well for the match tomorrow against New Zealand, and hopefully a quarter-final place, and that's where we want to be.
As we speak, we're waiting for New Zealand and Japan to arrive out onto the field. Do you watch these games, or is it just all focused now on what recovery needs to happen between now and 8 o'clock?
Probably definitely recovery, and then we'll watch Japan, see how they play, see what works for them, see where we can exploit them. But, you know, the staff will do that, the management and that. We'll probably be more so rest, calm down, and then when game time comes, starts building again.
Good luck later on.
Thanks very much.
Damien, you posed the question there to Jordan about were any nerves, because the eyes of the world are on them here. All of Team Ireland, the first team out as well, and they didn't show any of those nerves.
Well, I don't know now. I think there was a great sense of relief. I think to look at the body language, to be honest with them. Even I sat down yesterday, Zach Ward and Hugo Lennox were out for media duty yesterday. There's a combination of things here. This is a squad that have finished second in the World Series this year and deservedly have finished second to Argentina. You can say that they've been bullish, or you can say that they're just supremely confident based on what they've done before, but the message that is coming from this squad is we are here to medal. We are not here, like, and they can have serious aspirations about medaling if they can continue and build on the form that they've done earlier this year. Like, 7 of the 12 players who competed in Tokyo are back. So it's a very, very experienced squad. You've obviously got Hugo Keenan comes in from the Ireland and Leinster setup, who brings what experience he has into the fray as well. I think today was very much the potential banana skin. If South Africa had managed to turn around, you know, the balance of advantage between the sides that Ireland have enjoyed in recent times, it would have put Ireland in a really serious position of needing to not only beat Japan but also to beat New Zealand tomorrow. You would have been effectively on a salvage mission, I think, of kind. So I do agree with you, though, about we often underestimate the pressure of being the first ones in. And, like, you know, you talk to Kenneth Egan, was the boxing captain in Beijing back in 2008, and he was the first person drawn to fight. And he revelled in the fact that I'm the captain, I'm leading this group into battle, I'm going to be the first man in and the last man out. That's a direct quote from him. So I think there would have been a sense, you can imagine what it's been like for them in the village over the course of the last couple of days. You know, even to, it's really interesting to see the dynamic yesterday. I was at a table in the village, I was lucky enough to get into the village to do some interviews, and you're at a table with boxers and rugby players, and they're introducing themselves to each other because they've never met each other, and it's I'm a rugby player, and they're all starting to share this expertise. And I can only imagine what it's been like for the guys over the course of the last couple of days. Everyone knew this was happening in advance of the opening ceremony. And listen, let's be blunt as well, these lads don't want to be out of this Olympics before the opening ceremony has even happened. They want to be in their beds on Friday evening while 27 of their colleagues are on a flotilla down the Seine for the opening ceremony, because they want to be here for the quarterfinal, semi-finals and the medal matches on Saturday afternoon local time.
Absolutely. Well, here's hoping it goes well for the Irish team against Japan at 8 p.m. Elsewhere, holders Fiji humped Uruguay 40-12. Australia beat Samoa. Argentina beat Kenya. But Damien, France were held to a draw, 12 points apiece against the USA in a packed Stade de France.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, listen, Shane, this is Anton Dupont's world and we're just living in it because, France, United States was the third matchup. This stadium has a capacity of 69,000. Obviously, the press facilities alone that have been built reduces the capacity from what we would know. As of going to bed last night, we were told there were 68,500 tickets sold. I can tell you they probably shifted the 500 that were left over. And come here, anyone who's watched the Sevens will know they do these, like, there's two DJs on a rotation and there's dance cams and there's loads of stuff around the stadium to try and create the atmosphere. It didn't need any of it at 4:30 local time, because when they introduced the French team to run out from one end of the ground, the roof came off the place and it was really kind of, I won't say it was silent, but somebody had turned the level from 15 down to 4 by the time the final whistle went. And I think there's a little bit of disappointment that, you know, France didn't get that game underway. They're in a big group with the United States and Fiji. And I'm looking at the schedules here. They play Uruguay at 8 o'clock. So I think 8 o'clock local time. So I think they will be quite confident that they can do a job on Uruguay and get the train back on the tracks.
Okay, great stuff. Come here, Damien, just before I do let you go, that football match has officially finished 4 hours after it started. Morocco defeated Argentina by 2-1. No such drama at the Sevens tournament, but it is, I know I was chatting to Nadine at the top of the show, a massive security operation place over there.
Sorry, I should tell you, Australia have just beaten Kenya 21-7. I don't know if you can hear the atmosphere in the background here at the stadium. It's massive. And listen, anyone who's... You can imagine there's, like, airport-style security checks everywhere we go, and your bags go through the scanner and you walk through the airport like things. Definitely escalated today with the first day of competition. So any of us who have... you can't buy bottles of water anywhere. It's all sustainability. Sustainability is the big buzzword here. So you have to drink your... Whatever drink you bring with you, you have to drink it in front of them. And they double, treble check everything that came in today. There's a lot of road closures. So, you know, even where our hotel is, we're quite some distance from the city centre. We went out for a walk to get our bearings and get a bit of fresh air on Monday evening. And there's roads with barriers, retractable barriers across them. And members of the army are there. If you can demonstrate that you can travel down that road or have legitimate reason to travel down that road, they will remove the barrier for you. Likewise, I'm told it's very, very extreme in the city centre near the Champs-Élysées and Trocadéro, and obviously around the Seine in advance of the opening ceremony, that basically you are required to carry your passport or identification at all times, so that they can tally that if you're an accredited member of media, tallies with who you are. A lot of people, there's 15 million people, they say, will visit the greater Parisian area in advance or over the course of the games. Local business representative groups were talking last week about the fact that most Parisians have fled the place because life is quite restrictive in these measures. I'll finish with, like, there is a very, very significant army presence on the ground, and, like, very... quite evidently very well armed and very well trained, and there's been a temporary army camp that's been set up in the city to facilitate. I think it's 40,000 police and 10,000 members of the army, and they are quite visual. They are quite a presence, travelling in maybe groups of 8 to 10 of them in a go. So you're very aware that there's something big going on in Paris, and you're equally very aware that there's quite a significant security operation has been put in place to either dispel you from trying anything or to ensure anything that might potentially occur or possibly occur is going to be quelled fairly quickly.
Okay, good stuff. We'll leave the conversation there for now. Damien O'Mara reporting live from the Stade de France. Thank you very much for joining us. Before we take a break, time to remind you about our fantastic car competition, because RTE Sport has teamed up with Harris Maxis, one of Ireland's longest standing automotive distributors, and retailers, to give you the chance to win a brand new Maxis MIFA 9 worth over €80,000. It's the world's first full-size pure electric MPV, a car big enough for your whole team with a range of up to 520 kilometres on a single charge, delivering comfort and style on a whole new level with generous internal space and luxuries to keep everyone happy on the road, alongside intelligent driving and superior safety levels. You can take a look at the car on psychmaxis.ie. So if you fancy driving away in that €80,000 car, here's your chance with this week's question. Which of these teams knocked out Kerry to go through to this year's GAA Football All-Ireland Senior Football Championship Final. Was it Armagh or Tyrone? If you know the answer, then text the word WIN followed by Armagh or Tyrone and your name to 57886 right now. Each text entry costs €2.50. You must be over 18 to enter. Full details and all applicable terms and conditions are available now on rte.ie/competitions, where the lucky winner will also be revealed. The competition closes on August 6th with more chances to enter and win across RTE. So keep an eye out for that.
Game on.
GAA.
Now joining us to chat Gaelic Games is RTE Sports' Damien Lawler. Damien, how are you, sir?
Good, Shane. Good evening to you.
Listen, before we get into our conversation, you were speaking to an Armagh legend, Stephen McDonnell, courtesy of Allianz, and the conversation surrounding around Kieran McGeaney and the sliding doors moment, really, because it wasn't too long ago that the Armagh manager faced a vote from the clubs in the county to stay on or not stay on. Last winter,
around the time of the closed season, when the vote took place to see whether Kieran would stay on or not, did you have any worries at that stage about what might happen if Kieran didn't get back in?
You don't know what way clubs are thinking. That's the concern. I don't think it ever should have gone to a vote. I think, yes, it's taken a wee bit longer than expected, but Kieran always had a vision to get us to a certain level, and he has us there now, and he has us there with a remarkably good side and a very strong bench as well. So, yes, there was concerns because, as I said, you know, where are the clubs going to go with this? And thankfully, you know, the vote for yes far outweighed the vote for no.
Anytime you go to see Armagh, they always maybe look like that they could cut loose at any moment, maybe a small bit conservative at times, and they didn't quite get over the lines in finals. But small margins for the last 2 or 3 years, really. Would you go along with that?
Absolutely. I think the stat is going back as far as 2021, that they haven't been beaten 70 minutes of championship football outright. You know, that shows you how difficult they are to play against. The other end of things, yes, they put in some sublime performances on the attacking front, but the way the game is played at the minute, you know, you can't go gung-ho all the time or you're leaving yourself totally wide open at the back. But, you know, you're only as good as your next game, and Galway, like Armagh, play a similar style. A good attacking team, a lot of firepower up front, and if they get a service and delivery of the ball, then they can cause you serious harm. So it all depends on which, I suppose, forward units capitalize on the supply of ball that they get.
Stevie, I was at the round robin game just a few weeks ago, and either team could have won that. What sort of a game do you expect this time around? Like, could this in any way turn into an end-to-end affair?
I think it'll be an attractive game of football, but I think it'll be a counter-attacking game of football, if you know what I mean. Going back to the previous meeting, I do believe that Galway were unfortunate not to win that game. They were probably the better team over the 70 minutes in that game. Armagh got a goal at the right time. That is probably the beauty about this Armagh team at the minute. They seem to get key scores when they really need to get key scores. But you look at the scoring power, and that's where I go lean towards, I suppose, 9 times out of 10. You look at the scoring power in any team, and that's ultimately what's going to win you the match. And Galway have it in abundance with Finnerty, Comer and Shea Walsh. You know, what an inside line that is. And then the style that and the performances that John Maher is putting in as well. You know, he's a linchpin there too. And, you know, Armagh have those match winners as well. Rian O'Neill, Turbo, Rory Grugan, Ashton Connolly. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. There's been nothing between the teams in terms of their championship games over the last couple of years, and I don't think there's going to be much come the end, come Sunday as well. And I think it really is going to go down the stretch. The last 20 minutes will be telling on the impact that the subs have.
So that was Stephen McDonnell chatting to Damien Lawler. And Damien, that's a fascinating conversation because, as I mentioned in the lead into it, it was a genuine sliding doors moment for Armagh football.
Yeah, and I would say that, like, I'm only saying this as an educated guest, but I would say that the senior players, like, made it be known to their clubs that they wanted this man to stay and stay put. It's gas, Shane. All these years later in Kildare, some of the players are still very upset about how he was let go from here and the vote that he faced down there in Kildare, where I live. So you'd hear about it fairly frequently. And I think the senior players at Armagh were not going to let this happen anyway this time around, even though back in Kildare in the days, the senior players wanted to hang on to Kieran McGeaney big time as well. But I think the vote was fairly considerable in the end. And there is probably a feeling now that it's taken a bit longer than expected for Armagh to come through, but they're taking their chances now in the clinical moments in games. And if you're reading behind the lines, there was a lot of work to do for Kieran McGeaney. But they've kept faith with him. Counties don't always do that, Shane. Now they're back in an All-Ireland final, and the county's gone orange and white. Everything from sheep to houses, it's all painted orange and white. Tickets can't be got for love or money. And McGeaney's responsible for an awful lot of that.
And now Kieran McGeaney has an All-Ireland final to look forward to, which is, it's wild stuff, really. So Kieran McGeaney stayed on with Armagh. Paddy Christie has stepped down from Longford. Westmeath have a new hurling manager. I mean, it's very hard to keep up with all this managerial movement. Is there more changes than normal at this time of the year, Damien?
I would say over the next few weeks we'll probably answer that question, Shane. I think with the nature of the inter-county championships, the club championships starting soon, a lot of counties want their new managers to be able to look at the club championships forthcoming to see what talent is there and who needs to be brought in and maybe who needs to be moved on as well. So yeah, there's quite a lot of early movement. Paddy Christie stepped down last night. He was given a 3-year term back in 2022. Paddy had a good record at college's level, a good record at club level. He was coach when Tipperary won the Munster title in 2020. And he has given a 3-year term, stayed for two. They won back-to-back O'Byrne Cups. They had an OK season in the Tailteann Cup first time around. It didn't work out for them at all this year. They had a really credible league campaign this season, 8 points. 10 would have got you promoted. But the championship opener against Meath, they lost but did OK. And from there then their season kind of free-falled. So Paddy had a decision to make and announced it last night that he was gone. So Longford are looking for a new manager. Leitrim are looking for a new manager. Carlow looking for a new manager. Tipperary looking for a new manager. And it's going to be really interesting because if you're taking over a county at the maybe the lower tiers of Gaelic football, expectations are still high in those counties and you have to manage against that. Maybe you don't have the playing resources that other counties do have as well. So I think a lot of managers, I think for counties in some of those situations, you're better off going for a young in-house manager. And I think even with Kildare here, they're looking for a new manager too. And a lot of talk locally would be that Brian Flanagan will get it. Brian led Kildare to an under-20 All-Ireland title, guided Summerhill to a first Meath title in 10 years. And Brian probably be given a 3 to 5 year term, I would have imagined, if he's getting the job. That's what I'd be looking at, to develop younger talent. So that's kind of like a model that's coming through the ranks too, Shane, where, you know, they're going indoors and internally. It might make more sense than getting a big high-profile coach in to look after only the senior team. So a lot to be said. And Sir Shabulfin and Hurling took over Westmeath last night. He was managing Meath up to last year. Sears has got a high pedigree with Davy Fitz as his coach. He was 5 years with him in Wexford. He was there when Clare won the All-Ireland in 2013. And I think, you know, we saw Darren Gleeson. We speculated about Darren Gleeson's future in last week's show. That Antrim gig has to be filled. And, you know, watch that with interest too, because Antrim are building their profile. They've got a good structures behind the scenes. Darren Gleeson did a right good job. The players are quite good. And I wonder, could you see a high-profile name going at that job in the months to come? But we'll keep an eye on that one as well, Shane.
We most certainly will. Lots to be decided. Come here, Damien, before I let you go, we will be previewing the match in detail, the small matter of an All-Ireland Senior Football Championship final this Sunday, Armagh against Galway. But I want to get your thoughts. How do you see this one playing out?
Oh, I wonder, could it be extra time in this as well, Shane?
Oh, really?
And I wonder, could you even look at a replay? Everything is going to be... I was at the match between both of those sides just a few weeks ago in Markievicz Park, and Galway probably ruled the roost on that but couldn't put Armagh away. Armagh are so hard to beat in open championship football. For the last number of years, they've been beaten in penalty shootouts, but that's really all that's got them knocked out of championship. And they're so hard to beat. And the difference this year with Galway is their resilience, I think. You know, they've really, really battled through 21 injury worries there at one stage. They've come from behind to win games. Their display against Dublin has surely unlocked even more levels of self-confidence within their own ranks. I would not be one bit surprised if it's a counter-attacking game on Sunday. Both teams fall off the kick-off, the kick-out, and prove hard to beat and get you on the counter-attack. You've got players like Dylan McHugh and Liam Silk weaving in from wing-backs to angles. They set up scores for Walsh and Comer coming out in the loop. The same thing is happening with Armagh when Rian O'Neill and Conor Turbitt and Connolly are getting into shooting positions. I can't see much to separate them. I certainly can't see much on the bench to separate them either, because they both have class coming off the bench, be it a Soupy Campbell or a Johnny Heaney or an Oisin O'Neill, or even a Sean Kelly if he's not fit to start. So I can't see what's going to separate them. And I couldn't really see what was going to separate Cork and Clare in the hurling last weekend either, Shane. But I just wonder, could you go to a replay on this one? I tell you, it's going to be some game. Deep down, I do hope that an end-to-end shootout type of game will materialise. That could yet happen, but it's pretty unlikely. I think it's going to be a counter-attacking game, and it'll still be very, very intriguing, Shane.
Well, it has a lot to live up to after last weekend's epic, but for now, Damien Lawler, we will leave the conversation there. Thank you, as always.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, it is time to chat Camogie here on Game On, and Aoife Murray joins us, as is tradition of a Wednesday, to look forward to two cracking semi-finals this weekend. First up, it's Cork versus Dublin at 1:15, and then Galway face Tipperary at 3 p.m, a repeat of the league final, of course. We are going to start our conversation on the Dublin versus Cork match. Before we chat to Aoife, though, we can hear from the respective captains, Cork's Molly Lynch and first Dublin's Aisling Mar.
Yeah, I think it's a big achievement for us in Dublin. Obviously, you know, you set out at the start of the year you want to play as long as you can, so getting to a semi-final is a huge achievement. And I think it's probably reflective of the work that's going in at club level across Dublin Camogie. And I think it's great to see in general, you know, we obviously are seeing different teams start to crop up here and there in Camogie between Tip winning the league this year, Waterford being in an All-Ireland final last year. So delighted that Dublin Camogie are kind of contributing to that change.
We have a few new girls onto the panel too, and I suppose kind of people who've done it before have taken them under their wing, so I suppose you know how it's going to work, the bus journey up and all that, so it is great. But look, at the end of the day, it comes down to the 60 minutes on the pitch, and you might not come across like a match an opponent before, so look, it's great to have under our belts, but we have a lot of work to do on Saturday as well.
So that was Dublin's Aisling Mar and Cork's Molly Lynch, who will be captaining their sides on Saturday in the semi-final. As I mentioned, Aoife Murray is with us. Cork Dublin should be a cracker of a contest. Is this a free hit for Dublin?
Look, in short, yes, I do think it's a free hit, and that's no disrespect to one Galway or Dublin Camogie, or two where they've got to and what they've achieved so far this year. But it is a free crack in the sense of they got through that quarter final, which was a big, big win for them, taking out Kilkenny. You know, one of probably what the three powerhouses that we would constantly have discussed over the past few years. So this is a free shot because 99% of the eyes will be on Cork, and 99% will be expecting a Cork win. So it's a complete and utter free strike for Dublin. What a lovely way to go into a semi-final. But equally, I'm sure they will want to not be just there to make up a pairing in the semi-final. Looking at how, I suppose, they maturely went about their business in the quarter-final. Huge respect to the backroom team for how they got themselves set up to frustrate the living hell out of Kilkenny and slowly but surely break them down. They will absolutely have some sort of a system or game plan in place this weekend to try and do something equal to Cork and frustrate them for as long as possible. However, I don't think Saturday they'll be able to go 20 minutes without scoring like they did in the quarterfinal. So that would be a small concern with how they set up so defensively. They pack that defensive line and then hope to get the opposition on a counter. It was successful, albeit for those 20 minutes. It wasn't. I think Cork might have just too much from that half-back line that will be able to score from distance, so they won't need to necessarily break down that heavily, heavily compacted defensive system of Dublin.
Well, Cork has to be patient, because if you're one of those Cork players now preparing for this match, you know that Dublin are probably going to sit back. They're going to try and frustrate you. And as you mentioned there, they're going to try and hit you on the break as well. So is patience key for this Cork team?
Oh, it is. And just trusting each other, like just trust the system, trust how you've trained. I know everybody says trust the system, right? But like, it is very much going to be a patient game. They will no doubt want to come out of the blocks and come out of the blocks really, really quickly. Just kill off any Dublin hope. That's certainly what I would be thinking would be the message to the girls, is go out there in the first 10 minutes. We need to drive it home that this now is up another level. If that doesn't happen, then it is an absolute patience game. It is about chipping away, right? Trying to get as many long distance scores as possible. Start knocking them over from 45 to 65 to 70. Cork definitely have the players that can do that. So let's use that strength. And that's where that patient build-up should come from. I'm sure if you've got the likes of Amy O'Connor and Katrina Mackey inside the forward line, of course, as an outfield player, you will just want to get the ball in there as much as possible to those two quality players. But I do think it's a case of where you would be hoping for the likes of Laura Hayes, Saoirse McCarthy, Aisling Thompson to start opening up those shoulders and start to knock about 5 or 6 points from out that distance. You'll try and break Dublin down, and then you can start to try and expose the inside forward line. But 100%, it's going to be patience. If they can't knock Dublin off their game plan within those first 10 minutes, then it's patience and just chip away at the points.
So that's one semi-final. Cork-Dublin, as I mentioned, 1:15, that one throws in. There is also the small matter of Tipperary versus Galway, which is going to be a fascinating contest. Before I get your thoughts, Aoife, we can hear from Tipperary's Karen Kennedy and Galway captain Roisin Black.
Yeah, we're delighted now we're into the All-Ireland semi-final, and we had a huge battle against Waterford there in Croke Park. So yeah, I've huge belief in our team that we could go the next step now and hopefully make the All-Ireland final. Do you know, we had a rocky championship, I suppose, but do you know, all we're doing is looking forward to the next game, and that's all that matters now going ahead.
We won't be changing majorly the way we play. We obviously want to focus on ourselves and getting the performance out of ourselves, so sticking to what we know and what we're good at and just hopefully getting that out of ourselves on Saturday. I suppose we haven't been the easiest team to support the last few years, so look, we'll be just looking to get something back, to give back to our supporters and give back to everyone in Tip that has probably stuck in there with us the last few years.
So that was Tip's Karen Kennedy and Galway's Roisin Black speaking there. As I mentioned, Aoife, it's a repeat of the league final, which was a brilliant match, to be fair. Nothing between them, basically, just a single score in the end as well. Both of these teams have had exciting group stages in the championship. Tipperary near perfect, to be fair, and Galway, of course, an unbelievable victory in the manner of that victory over Waterford. So what's going to be the difference between these sides on Saturday?
It's very hard to say, because you look at, even just take the championship, Tipperary had a very straightforward run to the semi-finals. I think performed consistently well throughout, racked up some serious scores, and defended really, really well. So, you know, Tipperary had a lovely journey to get to here, whilst constantly building their panel, getting the likes of Cotavan back in, more time into the legs, really strong bench. So I think they've had the best possible run that they could have had to get to the semi-final. Then I think you take Galway, who probably had a little bit of an up and down performance of a championship. I think, in fairness, they were still trying to find what's their starting 15 and what's their finishing 15. I think there was a bit of a journey, which, look, you get to semi-final and you've had the ability to do that journey, happy days. So for me, you know, that draw against Wexford was probably the biggest maybe blip within the championship run for them. Tipperary, in fairness, had beaten them twice, I think, this year. So, you know, it's a bit of that Dublin-Cork. Will Dublin be able to beat Cork? Tipperary know they're able to go and beat Galway, but they also know that there's such small margins in semi-finals, losing out last year. So it'll be really, really interesting. The very experienced Galway versus a Tipperary team that has not broken through that semi-final in, gosh, I can't actually, is it 15 or 20 years since they've actually broken that semi-final ceiling? So, you know, will Galway's experience a win out on Saturday?
Yeah, I think I mentioned that to Karen, and she spoke really well on that. It's a good while now since that golden era of the early 2000s with that Tipperary team, and silverware plenty as well. Like, getting the, do we read much into actually lifting a league trophy and having that victory in that regard of actually having silverware? Because it would mean a lot to Tipperary Camogie to be back in a final, of a senior All-Ireland final.
Yeah, look, I think it's a bit like the Dublin thing. Winning that quarter final, it teaches you can do it. I think Tipperary winning that league and breaking that, I suppose, long run of no silverware, I think if anything, it just reinforces probably the management's message to the players is you can do it. The hardest thing sometimes is actually believing it, you know, because hope will get you so far, right? But hope will also break your heart. So for Tipperary, Tipperary to know what it's like to win. They also know what it's like to win in Croke Park. I know we're in Nolan Park, but they know that big final, that final day of a championship. So for me, I think it's probably a massive plus. But seeing how they've gone about their business, they seem to have forgotten it very quickly, in the sense of they went straight on to the next plan. And the next plan was the semi-final. It wasn't get to a quarter final or get out of the group. It was, can we do that fast track straight to the semi-final? Like, that was, I've read them, I've heard them say it. It was to get straight to that semi-final. I thought that was a fascinating mindset. Because all of a sudden it wasn't, we want to top the group, or we want to come second, or we want to do a quarter final. It was semi final. That is where we want to go to. Even reading some of the, I think Mairead Evanston was interviewed, and you know, I actually loved how she went about that interview, because you know, she said we're fed up, and I just went, do you know what? It's class, first of all, because she was just speaking her mind, wasn't she? You know, and she was just saying we're fed up, we're hungry, and I think, you know, when you have an animal that's fed up and hungry, they're a serious contender. So I think for me, Tipperary have learned how to do it, and they've continued on their business, and they've done it nice and quietly. So I think it's going to be it's going to be a massive battle.
How much do Galway need to raise performance levels if they are to get over the line against Tipperary, from judging them on that quarter final in particular?
Well, I think if Tipperary come out and hit anywhere near their best, then this is going to have to be Galway's best game. That's just looking at their performance, that kind of seesaw performance that they've had since the very get-go. Because in fairness, I thought in many ways they were a little bit lucky to get to the league final, could have won the league final, which I have to say, huge admiration for Galway to not be playing at your best, but there's always thereabouts, you know? It's a huge sign, to suppose, determination and stubbornness effectively within that panel. But for me on Saturday, as I said, if Tipperary are hitting towards their best, then this is going to have to be Galway's best game. I think looking at the quarters, Mallon getting double marked, it really just showed to me how much that inside forward line is relying on Mallon. So like for Saturday, if Mallon is double marked again, then those other players around her are really going to have to step up and take on some of that mantle. If there's one or two seriously minding Mallon, there has to be space somewhere. There has to be a free player. Mm. Quarter, Aoife Donoghue really came into it, and she did kind of take up that charge massively for Galway. But again, for Galway, it had to take, I suppose, one of the more experienced players like Aoife Donoghue to lift everything, take up the energy, run into that space and attack the opposition, help out defensively. Like, you can't always look to Aoife Donoghue to do that. So I do think on Saturday you need another player really stepping up outside of Mallon, outside of Aoife Donoghue, and even Derbla Higgins there in that full back line, who I think is, look, I'm always a big fan of hers, and I always think she's one of the best defenders in the game. But again, in the quarters, I thought she was so solid. So, you know, I would say Galway will need somebody else outside of those three to really step up into that leadership and take the game to Tipperary.
That's extremely well laid out. If I did push you for a prediction, I know you're siding with Cork probably in the first semi-final, but in this one, when it's all said and done, is it going to be a case of the two group winners meet in the final?
I do. I think I'm going on form. Obviously, look, I am going to go with Cork for the first game. But the second one, I think I'm just siding with Tipperary. And I just think they've got such a well-worn panel now that little bit of impact from the bench just might be the bit that gets them over the line. So listen, going with form, Cork and Tip final.
Okay, well, we will be reviewing both of those matches in detail next Wednesday. For now, Aoife Murray, thanks so much for taking the call.
Thank you.
Game on.
Camogie.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Now, Nadine, you've been waiting patiently to chat about ladies football and the semi-finals last weekend. Before we get into the matches in detail, overall, were they entertaining? Was it a good standard of football?
No, Shane, I suppose I say with regret. And I don't think I'm the only person to have that opinion. I just felt overall the pace, the quality of games, I just felt it was poor. I just felt for All-Ireland semi-final stage, it was disappointing. You know, look, to sum it up, I suppose, in a sense, both the winning teams, Galway and Kerry, scored 3 points each in the second half. You know, yeah. And there was a wind. Yeah, you know.
Still, it's a grim statistic.
Very much so. And it wasn't, I didn't feel it was a gale force wind that could influence a game in that regard. Look, fair to say, the slight favourites in both games won. You know, Kerry and Galway were both favourites. Cork, I feel, will be disappointed not to be in the final in general. You know, they did dominate possession, and we'll get into it in a few minutes, but they just didn't have they lacked a bit up front, as did Armagh. And I think, you know, for Armagh especially, you know, I think they'll really be struggling with the fact that they've beaten Kerry twice already this year, beaten them comfortably. And I know their manager said before the game that, you know, they've been coping well without Amy Mackin, but you were just watching that game, especially in the second half, and you thought, if Amy Mackin was in there, you know, surely they would have got over the line, having only conceded 1-8 against Kerry. So, you know, you ask yourself, why, you know, why was it a poor standard?
You can't really blame the weather.
No, you definitely can't blame the weather. And as I was saying, Shafir, you know, I would feel it's a bit of a myriad of factors. You have, like, players available in each county. Are the best athletes in each county available? We don't know. You know, they could be playing other sports. We've seen players go to rugby, AFL, soccer now, coaching. And I think it's becoming more and more apparent, you know, there's an influence of men's football in our game. And we're maybe that 10 years behind men's football in how our game's evolving. There's a huge emphasis now on defensive tactics, especially, you know, teams sitting back and going on the break. And I would feel that perhaps female athletes aren't built in the same way as male athletes, and they can't get up and down the pitch for 70 minutes. And just that, I suppose that the focus is off the pitch now, Shane. It's strength and condition, it's nutrition, and that day of, you know, putting your best 15 out, telling them to work hard, and that, you know, that's football, it's not anymore. And that's fine for teams, you know, they have to go out and win at all costs, but we're judging this from as spectators and critics. And yeah, it was just, it was disappointing.
Well, men's football is only slowly,
it's coming out of it, so 10 years
very
time.
Slowly. So well, hopefully Galway Kerry in the August Bank Holiday in the ladies football final,
yes,
should be a cracker. So what did Galway 2-7 Cork 10 points, what got Galway over the line?
What got Galway over the line? I suppose there were a few things. I think matchups, in fairness to them, they completely nullified the Cork captain, Marie O'Callaghan, who has been in phenomenal form for them in the midfield this year. Marie Glynn paid absolutely no attention to what was going on around her on the pitch. Her job was to follow O'Callaghan, and she really nullified her influence. So that was a big factor. Leanne Cohen as well dropped deep for Galway. She dropped out to the midfield area, a very physical player. She gets on ball as well. You know, she makes a lot happen. She had a good game. Roisin Leonard, she came off at about 10 minutes to go, but her free taken, especially in that second half, she scored two monster frees. She had a good penalty. You know, that was it really, I suppose, for Galway. And, you know, again, we talk about what managers said. You know, their manager said that, you know, they've been criticised for not putting back-to-back performances together. For me, they didn't, but they still got over the line because they were playing against, you could say, an inexperienced Cork team who struggled up front. I would feel, had Galway played Kerry or Armagh, and if Dublin were still in it, they're not winning that game, but they did. And look, you have to give it to them, you can only play what's in front of you. Again, just going back to Cork, they dominated possession, I felt, especially in that second half, but no more than Armagh. They didn't have enough up front, and a big factor as well, and you have to give Galway credit in that regard, they had very, very good defensive shape. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a prior decision made by the Cork management, they weren't interested in taking shots from distance, even with the wind, Shane, in the second half. So Galway were able to sit in and just absorb that pressure, and I suppose you could say, like, Cork just kind of kept running into corners, and they just couldn't find space at all. But look, I'm critical of Galway, but credit to them, they're in a final, and I'm sure there's a lot of training to be done now in the next 2 weeks, and they'll definitely hope for an improvement in performance as well.
A much improved performance will be needed on Sunday, August 4th, against the Kerry team, who defeated Armagh by 1-8 to 7 points. Good value for the win, by all accounts.
Yeah, they were, I suppose. Look, it was largely a game of possession. You know, both teams struggled against their opposition defences, and we saw large spells of, sorry to say, but like boring possession around the middle. From the off, actually, Armagh really started brightly. They went up by a couple of points, much sharper, played with more intent. And Kerry looked nervous, Shane. They looked very nervous. They played within themselves. And while they loosened out as the game went on, there was still a bit of fear there with Kerry, I felt. They were very much, and I suppose people would say that, you know, semi-finals are nearly harder to win. You could see that they were just that little bit nervous. Look, the Armagh forward line, we spoke about Amy Mackin before. I felt, you know, Eve Lavery and came off with about 25 minutes to go, I think, 20 minutes to go. Niamh Henderson came off as well, Emily Druce. So Armagh took three of their six forwards out, and essentially, you know, before the end of the game, and they essentially play with four or five forwards anyway, so they basically changed their forward line, and that was a reflection on how they were struggling. And look, with Kerry, they were clever as well, Shane. They used the win advantage in the first half, they went up by 5 points, and they just shut up shop then, and Armagh just couldn't break them down really.
1-8 gets you to an All-Ireland final.
Would you believe it? You know, yeah, I don't know.
Are we ending on a negative note or a positive note when I say that?
Well, look, as we said, it's modern football. And I think as well, just, you know, to give Kerry credit, you know, you have to... to mention Emma Dineen there in full forward. While it wasn't an amazing overall offensive display from them, I felt Emma Dineen was a brilliant addition to them. She brought players in to the game around her. Niamh Conacher also had a great running game, you know, so you'll hope that those players in the big wide open spaces of Croke Park will exploit them. And look, we look forward to a good final, hopefully.
Well, we will be previewing it in detail, and hopefully it will be a cracker on the August Bank Holiday, 4:15 for Galway versus Kerry. Two association football matches this evening in the Avenir All-Ireland Cup. If you're in the vicinity of Galway or anywhere around North Dublin, Galway United play Wexford at 7:45. Shelburne hosts Shamrock Rovers at 7:45 as well. Hopefully there's a bit of entertainment in those matches. For now, Nadine Doherty, thank you very much for popping in as always. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler and Laura Lee Davis for working on this evening's show. January Winters is up next on 2FM, so do stay tuned. From all of the Game On team, though, it is goodbye for now.